I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Aaron Largé Kaplan joins me now. The celebrated guitar virtuoso and composer has just released a new album, Guitar America 250, Revolutionaries and Rockstars. In the album, he and guest musicians and poets mark more than the American semi-quincentennial with songs that span the life of the Republic, from traditional songs from before the Civil War through the two World Wars, including The Star-Spangled Banner, Battle Hymn of the Republic, Lift Every Voice and Sing, and Over There, among others. There are songs from the 20th and 21st century, like Bernstein's America from West Side Story, Van Halen's 316, and Paul Simon's America. Also represented on the album are the arrangements of John Cage, Alan Hove Hannis, Ian Weiss, and Florence Price, and the words of Francis Harper, Walt Whitman, Henry David Thoreau, and John Cage are represented on the album, with guest artists reading stirring and historical words. Aaron also provides a reading on the album, an amended version of the Bill of Rights that is not only inspiring but urgent. I'll ask Mr. Largé Kaplan about the album, his work as a musician and educator, and what the album represents as he views his country, its past, and this momentous anniversary. It's doubtless harder for people outside the United States to like America at the moment, and I'll get Aaron to address that. But the music, as rich and varied as it is on this album, representing so much of what America has meant, makes for a great album. Visit alcguitar.com for more. The new album is available for streaming and download on all the usual sites. It is a Navona Records release. We spoke 3 weeks ago with Aaron joining me from Boston. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Aaron Largé Kaplan. Mr. Largé Kaplan, good morning.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you.
Nice to talk to you. I really enjoyed this album because it's such a marvelous survey of what American music is in a lot of ways, and how a lot of people view America. I know right now, speaking as a Canadian, it's hard to like some Americans at this point. I mean,
understandable.
Yeah,
I really try to separate people from the kind of politics that we see. I mean, sometimes you can't, but there are lots of good people all over the world.
Indeed.
And I think their art shouldn't be thrown in with the political leanings of the moment.
Indeed, but you know,
the moment.
Yeah, but you know, a lot of these songs do such a wonderful job at reflecting America at certain periods in its history. I mean, you know, this is you're looking at America over 250 years. A lot of these songs, you know, were used in battle. Were used,
right.
You know, were very significant during troubling times in America's history. And you know, I couldn't help but think as I was listening to the album that these songs do such a wonderful job at reflecting what has made America great, if you will.
Yes, thank you. I'm glad you noticed that. Not to harp on times now, but there have always been issues that need fixing. You know, zits and all, I think in a certain sense there are people who've lived a very, you know, everything's okay, we fixed all the past problems. And I'm very inspired. Like, I grew up in Colorado, and my knowledge of American history was more Colorado-based. I read Trail of Tears about the First Nation and the horrible treatment that went on there, and grew up reading about unions and militias. But the Civil War, especially, like, I knew dates, I knew battles, but learning about, you know, Julia Ward Howe and suffragists, abolitionists, and what they used music for and what they struggled against, the poetry of Frances Harper, you know, she's one of the first black women to be published in the United States, and I don't think her life was easy at all. But there was this hope that if they could find hope, then I think I can be inspired by that and also learn from it. And it's fascinating how the arts, you know, I used to say this to my students, that you can learn, you know, history through wars and whatnot, but man, use music. And I took my own advice and learned a lot about my own history. my country's history through this music.
So the two songs on the album that I couldn't get enough of. The minute I heard it, I went back and listened to it, and several days later, I'm every chance I get, I want to hear Simple Gifts, and I love the Battle Cry of Freedom, and they're not only beautiful, they're not only beautiful pieces, but In Your Hands are made more beautiful, but they evoke so much of what America has gone through, especially these challenges in the past. And, you know, they remind me of certain programs I saw as a kid in Canada, you know, on PBS probably, of the Civil War, of you know, the United States and history programs like that. And I can't help but thinking as I'm listening to those two songs on your album, yes, there are challenges in the past that have, you know, the America has gone through, has made it past. But there are challenges, obviously, today, but they're not, I guess they're not insurmountable like they were before. And I guess there's the hope there in music, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you say it just as I think it should be. You know, Battle Cry of Freedom, That's the one you mentioned, right?
Yeah.
Or is it Battlehead? Yeah, the Battle Cry of Freedom is one of the first ones that I arranged. And I grew up not knowing it, but always connecting it to the South in the Civil War.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not a flag-waving guy. I read too much history to do that now. But when I learned about it and how it was actually a song written by a Northern musician, George Root, and it was so popular that it got taken and they changed the words, which just seems kind of, you know, taken by the South and changed the words to suit their cause,
yeah.
Which just shows the power of music.
Mm, yeah.
Over, I mean, just wow. And I think Simple Gifts, which is a song I played as a kid on clarinet, you know, in my elementary school band, there is an idealism there, a simplicity. I know Aaron Copland, when he used it in Appalachian Spring, that was something he was drawn to. But it is this kind of this ideal that is the part. I mean, the reality of countries, of politics, I've traveled a lot. I have great friends in Russia, friends in Asia, Latin America, and, you know, to throw under the bus a whole culture because of political decisions. There are good things out of every country, and there are some horrible things out of countries. But this idealism, I just think that's what attracted people to come to the country, to the U.S., and decide, hey, I can. It might be hard, but I can do this. And I think it changed other countries. I read about France after the U.S. Revolution. They're just like, look at what they're doing. You know, right now, I think a lot of Americans are going, look at what they're doing. We should be doing that too. And I hate to make it all political, but music was here before we were.
Yeah.
It'll be here after us. And I think if we can take a moment and listen and be inspired, then I'm doing my job, hopefully. And I feel a lot of pride in this project, but a lot of pride I didn't know I had in the country, because it is the tough times that show our colors. And there are lots of people fighting for very good things, and that will need to continue long, long beyond our current situation.
So I had the album on as I was working here at my desk on various things. And the thing that struck me the first time I listened through it, and I got this not only from the music, but obviously the spoken word pieces throughout, there's a thread of optimism. And listening to you now, you know, I assume that you felt this way. And, you know, I can't help but think that you feel this way after listening to you just now. I mean, you can't help but be optimistic regardless of how bad times are wherever you are, right?
Yeah. I mean, what's the other option?
Yeah.
I mean, that my wife and I talk about this. My wife is an immigrant. She came from France when she was, you know, early 20s. And to learn and work and create a life where there wasn't opportunity for her in France. And which most of my friends are like, what are you doing here? Go to France. And it's like, you know, every country has their issues.
Yeah.
And that's without family. but I'm a realist. I do know, like, I work in the music business. It is not an easy field, but the other choices out there that will satisfy happiness, satisfy more than just a bank account, I feel like this is something I can do and share with people, and it's, for lack of a better word, it's a bit of a duty. I mean, classical music is very good at museum pieces.
Yeah. You know,
there will be 400 new albums of Mozart played slightly differently, maybe. And nothing against Mozart, but he's done well. But this music, especially the American, the earlier tunes, that doesn't exist on the guitar, really, outside of amateur music. And I saw this as an opportunity to say, you know, there's classical music for the guitar that's not Spanish, not Latin American, not just European. But here, look what we can do. And I do have hope. I see people struggling, and I think struggle means there's decisions to make. If it were everything were easy, no one would do anything. Not to say that what's happening now is good at all. I'm not saying that it builds character. But I do think that there is a culture of good people. I've experienced house fire. I've had injuries to myself, to my wife, in accidents. I've had to build a career in an instrument that most people don't know much about. And I'm grateful for it. I get to play music every day. Could I be paid more? Of course. I don't know anyone who says no to that. But I've had some success in composing and performing. I have some wonderful students. And I have hot water, a good shower, good food. You know, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And I will work to make sure that others have that as well. So I am optimistic. Maybe fatally. Hopefully
well,
not.
Yeah, well, yeah, hopefully, yeah. The music that you grew up with, I mean, that's reflected on the album as well. I guess the music that we hear in our formative years, that shapes how we view music we like, I guess, that was important for you to also include on the album, wasn't it?
Yeah. I assume you're talking like Paul Simon, Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah.
So I started on electric guitar when I was 11. I had played a little clarinet in elementary school, and I wanted to be a rock star. And I would sit in my room in the basement, and I would try and figure out songs and try to find, you know, sounds. And I quickly realized that I was not writing my own music, and that being in a band was hard. You had to coordinate with other people. And I heard classical guitar when I was 16 in my high school Spanish class, and I said, oh my gosh, that's what I want to do. And the thing is, that video that we watched of this famous guitarist, Andrés Segovia, he was playing a tune called Asturias, which the Doors quoted in Spanish Caravan.
Mm.
And I, being a little rock and roll boy, loved the Doors. And I said, oh, that's the real thing. I didn't know it was written for piano. I had no idea. But I went home and I started using my fingers instead of a pick. I worked all summer, save up money to buy a cheap classical guitar, and I found a teacher. And for a long time, I pushed all pop, rock, all of that away because I was like, I need to catch up with classical music. So I was reading liner notes, going to the library, going to all the concerts I could. And when this project came up, I was like, what can I do that is me? And one of the pieces, Midnight Train, is a piece I commissioned for a project called the New Lullaby Project. So that's kind of me, but that doesn't really represent America. And then I was like, well, Eddie Van Halen. You know, I grew up in the 80s and 90s. Like, Eddie Van Halen was, is still, you know, kind of a top-tier guitarist.
Yeah.
And so to be able to take that, I said, you know, I'm going to stick that on this album. And Paul Simon, you know, my parents listened to it. I grew up listening to Graceland. And I thought, you know, I should do an arrangement of Paul Simon. And that was, I really just sat down and listened to a few different pieces and said, you know, I think America, being an America album, would be a really great piece about, you know, him taking a road trip across America. It has this kind of Route 66 connection,
yeah,
this mystery of the unknown. And I did that, and I stuck it on the album, and people have responded to it, which is amazing. I usually play very contemporary music, John Cage, unknown composers. So it's fun to play music that people know,
yeah,
and have a connection to. Yeah.
I don't play any instruments at all. I don't read music. I'm curious to know, Aaron, are there kinds of music on this album that are harder to perform than others? Say, I mean, I would think that John Cage would pose challenges that, say, another composer might not.
Yes. Well, most of these pieces weren't written for guitar. So there's a certain element.
Yeah.
I arranged it. I took the original and said, okay, well, how can I make this work? Which, with a song, let's say Battle Cry of Freedom or Battle Hymn of the Republic, there are words. It's a very repetitive song. And without words, it's a very short song if I just do one verse. So I had to find ways to make it interesting. So with, like, the Battle Hymn of the Republic, that I had, it's very repetitive, but I have the melody goes from the top voice to the middle voice to the lower voice. I impersonate a snare drum in the very beginning of it by hitting my strings a certain way. So there's a certain difficulty in that because I created it, and I, my own weakness, I keep wanting to fiddle with things. So I'm always like, ooh, I could do this, I could do that. For the recording, I said, okay, this is what it is. But I'm performing a series of concerts this month, and I have to actually decide on the final arrangement. The John Cage is difficult because it's very spacious, and the guitar does not have a lot of resonance like a piano. I don't have a cast iron innard to frame to allow the resonant sounds. But I also think those are very intimate pieces that work well on the showing the colors of the guitar and the kind of the intimacy. The Hovhannes piece, Mystic Flute, that was a truck. Like I did that a while ago, but it really came together for the recording. So on a technical side, that one, you know, can I tell you what the scariest piece was on the album?
Yeah, please.
On the whole album? It's the Bill of Rights amended. That it's spoken word. It's mine.
Yeah.
I took the Bill of Rights and adjusted it, made a poetic interpretation of it, highlighting certain aspects of the Bill of Rights. And I recorded it, and that was the scariest thing, because it's my spoken word. It's the first time I've ever recorded my voice for an album, and when I was listening to it, trying to choose which take I liked or which pronunciation of a particular word came through, as a radio person, you know this. You pick up every little detail when you listen to something 10, 20 times. Like, why is my lips smacking together right there? And it was, that was really, I was really nervous about that. And so it doesn't quite answer your question, but of the pieces on the album, that one was the scariest for me to do, to put together.
I loved
it. And it's the Bill of Rights.
I loved how, I forget the word you used just now, adapted it. You punctuate certain words and you reread certain words, making it so powerful in terms of what the Bill of Rights is and what it should be. And yeah. And I guess the fear that a lot of us have about how it can be misconstrued, abused, and yet at the same time, you know, that it is one of these things in a society that a citizen should be able to rely upon.
Right. And how we interpret words written. I mean,
yeah.
I often would go into schools and I give educational programs, kind of young people's programs. I've done that for years because I want people to know what I'm doing and have an understanding. And one of the examples I give is that, you know, in French, a rooster is kikiriki. No, that's in Spanish, cocorico.
Mm.
And then in Spain, it's kikiriki. In the U.S., we say cock-a-doodle-doo. And does the rooster actually sound different? Or is it just how we interpret those sounds?
Yeah.
And we have a very hard time communicating with each other. And words can be wonderful. That's one reason I included the poetry. That's why I love poetry so much, is that words, you put an emphasis on something, you've changed the meaning. You change the speed of which we speak, the enunciation. It can bring out certain aspects. And because I removed words from all of these songs, whether it be the Leonard Bernstein or Irving Berlin, you know, I felt the need to put words into the album to say, wait, you know, here are these beautiful sounds that elicit emotions, but here are these words that go with it that also elicit emotions. And the Bill of Rights amended, I didn't want to change, I don't believe in necessarily changing it, but it is a living, we are living people, and this is a piece of paper that even those people who say, you know, we have to follow it to the every word, every letter matters, at the same time, they're being manipulated. They're manipulating it because what emphasis we put on something changes, and that's why we need people who study the history, who teach the history to our young people, and involve us. And that's what I tried with this. Is I'm like, you know what? When was the last time I read the Bill of Rights? What does it mean? Other than a vague argument to say, hey, well, Amendment 7 says this. How does that appeal to my life? And poetry has always appealed to my life.
Yeah.
And I think we as humans attract to that. So that was kind of it feels a little audacious to take something like the Bill of Rights and say, wait a sec, here's this. But also we get confined by it. So sometimes a little shake-up can be good, I think.
Yeah, it's another wonderful reminder. Just as a lot of these songs are on the album, you know, there's songs, obviously, that a lot of people have grown up with, sung, say, in public places, like a game of athletics or something like that. But
yeah.
We need to be reminded of what they say. But, you know, there's a lot of songs on this album that, in your hands, are just so beautiful, as I said, that we need to be reminded of how good American music has been. I was going to ask you about your hands because you use them to perform.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you're not skateboarding without gloves or careless in the kitchen with a knife. Well, what do you do to make sure that you take care of these instruments of yours?
Yeah. Well, I don't skateboard. I haven't done that since I was quite young.
Yeah.
But I did play sports. I was a rugby player and damaged a shoulder. So I'm like, okay, no more of that. I gave up skiing, and I'm from Colorado.
Mm.
You know, I broke my thumbnail once, the last time I skied. And I was like, that's a month to get that guy back. So it's worth it. It's worth it. I miss the mountains, but I love playing music, and it's worth it. So I take care of my fingernails. Diet is very important. I try and stay away from processed foods and sugar. And I know that there are certain things that help. So like iodine, which is found in seaweed. So I have a good excuse to eat sushi on occasion. The hands themselves, like sitting for 3 to 5 hours every day with an instrument is a lot of work. It's a very physical activity to elicit these sounds out of the instrument. And so I do regular exercises. I do not like running and lifting weights. I do a lot of stretching. I go for walks. I live not far from the ocean in Boston, so I can do that. And then I have a ton of stretches for the hands. All of my students, I think I have videos even on YouTube or TikTok somewhere where I show a few of them. But I'm regularly using the hands. I'm not afraid of a knife to, like, cut bread, and I go work in my yard.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a good thing to live, you know, life in a bubble. It creates weakness in the hands. Like, I want to have a strong grip. And so I help around. I do repairs. I have an old house, so I have to repair it myself or sell Buco More CDs. But I do use my hands, but I'm very aware. I have so many pairs of gloves constantly. I wear gloves a lot. Not that I'm afraid to touch people. I don't have a Glenn Gould issue in that sense. But, you know, it is, I have to take care of my hands. And, but I use them in such a manner that I hope that they stay with me for a long time. Mm-hmm. I had a wonderful teacher, Dmitry Gloryachev, who's this, a Russian who had moved to Boston. And he really showed me so much of how to play the guitar, where even if I'm playing very heavy on the right hand, my left hand is with ease and it's a nice natural squeeze. And I have a nice relationship with the guitar. I mean, my guitar is my favorite instrument. You know, this guitar that I recorded with is one of my favorites. And it feels right for me to play. If it doesn't and it hurts, then I have to change something. So, yeah, that's how I take care of my hands.
You are right-handed, are you?
Yes, I am right-handed.
Yeah.
So, if you look at my hand, my right hand has long nails. My left hand, I actually broke a finger in middle school playing dodgeball, Nerf dodgeball.
Uh-huh.
And a Nerf dodgeball hit my finger just wrong, and it broke. And, a few days later, I'm in the hospital getting a pin put in, and the doctor was talking with my dad and wasn't paying attention, and I was watching on the x-ray as they're putting this pin in, and I see the pin going in at a slight angle, and all of a sudden I hear the doctor go, oops, and he pulled it out and did it straight. So I'm actually missing about two-thirds of the tip of my third finger, my ring finger on my left hand.
Huh.
And I still play. If it were the other side, if I were lost, you know, the thumb side of the tip, I probably wouldn't have been able to play guitar the way I like it. But I had to learn how to work with that. So there's to bring this like a circular, like I suffered, but I had to learn how to make it work. And, you know, to bring that into like our world with politics, we have to learn how this works. We have to fix this. And hopefully it brings awareness to more people, enough people that we say, this isn't allowed to happen anymore. And I hope it doesn't build up to like a World War I, World War II, where you had, thankfully, you had a wonderful generation that came out of that that said, we can't let this happen again. They've passed on.
Yeah.
And, you know, they weren't perfect at all, but the institutions came out of that. Now we have to make sure those institutions are strong and represent everyone, not just large corporations.
Absolutely.
We don't have to go that deep. That's a whole other chapter.
Yeah, well, you're talking to a Canadian, and a Canadian understands that.
Yeah.
It's been such a pleasure talking today, Aaron. I can't tell you how much I enjoyed the album. I had it on repeat several times this past weekend. It's just a wonderful, wonderful, as I said earlier, a survey of America then as now. And just beautiful, beautiful performances, not just, of course, the music, but the spoken word as well. I so appreciate your time today. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy you enjoy Guitar America 250. You don't have to listen. You can listen to it after 250.
Absolutely.
You know, that happens.
Indeed.
But thank you so much, and I hope we can talk again. Cheers.
The website for more is at alcguitar.com. The album is called Guitar America 250 Revolutionaries and Rock Stars. It's artist Aaron Larger Kaplan. Join me on the line from Boston and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunton.